Welcome to the 14th ResEd podcast produced by Media Snackers with Global Kids. Coming up is a podcast interview with Sarah Robbins talking about education in Second Life and other virtual settings. To kick off this podcast, we're going to go over to Tampa with Amira and Rick from Global Kids and some friends.
Live from Tampa!
Hey ResEd, this is Amira.
And this is Rick.
And we're here at Second Life Education Community Convention in Tampa for your news and events this week. So we'll just give you the quick spiel real quick. First off, ResEd in Print was released, the preview at SUDCC and Virtual Worlds Expo last week. If you were there, you have a copy in your hand. It has a special Ethics and Virtual Worlds piece, and the full version will be available online for download September 29th at resed.org. It's a seasonal report. It summarizes the cutting-edge activities and discussions of educators in the ResEd community, and it includes a special piece from the Harvard University Good Play Project on ethics, as well as a lot of discussion about what's going on in Second Life, as well as Quest Atlantis and other virtual worlds.
In other exciting news about things that have been released at SLEDCC is the full release of the Second Life curriculum that is available free for download on resed.org. This curriculum was launched officially at SLEDCC as well as at Virtual Worlds in LA, I believe. It contains over 160 lesson plans for teaching the basics of Second Life, whether in a classroom, a library, or at home. It's available at no cost and designed to be adaptable by practitioners for a variety of uses, from teaching science to literature to global studies.
And the last news piece that we have to share with you today is that the Social Research Foundation has launched the first ever opinions panel in Second Life. So this is just looking at how in January 2006 there were 100,000 members in Second Life, and now there's about 11 million registered users. And so this poll is going to be coming out and figuring out who's owning land, what's going on, what's the money, what's the economy, and it's the first only research panel that's happening. Information on this is on resed.org. And if you have news that you want to feature on the site, feel free to email it over to resedinfo@globalkids.org.
My name is Sarah Robbins. In Second Life, I'm known as IntelliGirl Tully, and I'm actually IntelliGirl all over the internet. I've been teaching in Second Life for about 3.5, almost 4 years now. Wow, seems like a long time. I'm a PhD candidate at Ball State University, which is in Indiana. I'm also a consultant with lots of other higher eds and companies about education and corporate training and virtual worlds. I am the editor of the Linden Lab organized SLED blog, which is the Second Life Education blog for that community, and I've been doing that for about 8 months now. So, and I'm also the co-author of Second Life for Dummies. Wow. So all of that good stuff.
All of that. It sounds great. Well, thank you for being with us today, Sarah. Really appreciate it. Now, give us a little bit of history around communities of practice in and around Second Life, and maybe virtual worlds in general, because it sounds like you were involved right from the start there.
Yeah, it's been a pretty crazy ride the last few years. I actually, strangely enough, got interested in virtual worlds about 6 years ago when I was pregnant with triplets and I was on bed rest. I was stuck in bed for almost 6 months, and all I had was a laptop. So I started playing MMORPGs and got really interested in virtual environments and how hanging out in like Star Wars galaxies made me feel like I wasn't stuck at home. I actually felt like I had been out of the house. So I started doing a bit of research after my kids were born, when I went back to grad school and got really interested. But I was teaching a course for Ball State that's just second semester freshman composition, which most people are familiar with. And when I started teaching it in Second Life, we really started to have fun, and things really took off. And I just noticed that there was a huge difference in, you know, the face-to-face classroom, the traditional learning management systems that we were using, and then this virtual world. And at about the time that I started doing that, There were a couple of dozen educators probably in Second Life that I knew of anyway at that point, but it was still a pretty small community, and it was crazy enough that, you know, within a few months there were major news organizations covering it, because what we were doing was pretty nuts to the outside world. But of course now there's some 4,000 4,500, 4,700 educators just on the Second Life Education mailing list. Never mind, you know, how many thousands are in Second Life itself. So as a community of educators, it's just grown exponentially. One of the things that amazes me most about Second Life is the way that community of practice has developed.
Interesting. And can you tell me really how that community of practice manifests itself then?
It started with a few people who blogged, and then there was the mailing list was started by Pathfinder Linden. And there were, you know, 20 or 30 people there. And I think probably what really instigated a lot of the community formation was at that time, and it might still exist, I don't know, I haven't checked in a while, Linden Labs had this Second Life education space on the one of the main continents, and it was a small space, but there was a sandbox there, and this was before most of us had convinced a university to buy an island. So the sandbox became this communal space for a lot of educators, and it was small. It was maybe, you know, a 800 meter space. It was really small. But like Jeremy Kemp and Jeremy Hunsinger and I and Brian Carter and then Beth Ritter-Guth and just like the people who kind of started, we all just kind of hung out there, and that's how we got to know each other. And, Daniel Livingstone and Sludel in that sandbox, and you know, that was kind of the origins of it all. And then there were other technologies that sort of took off and facilitated that community. You know, there was the mailing list for sure, but lots of blogs popped up, and then there were some spaces in Second Life that were bigger and more community, and just more and more people started hopping in. And then, of course, there started to be major tracks at some of the education conferences dedicated to Second Life or virtual worlds, and certainly the SLCC conference contributed a lot to the formation of that community.
And tell us about SLED then, which is the SL education blog, and kind of how you got involved in that, and what does it do?
Well, the SLED blog was organized by Linden Lab. Claudia Linden approached me and asked me if I would be interested in running this space where it was kind of dual purpose in the beginning. First of all, the SLED mailing list had become quite large, and there were lots of people who were new to Second Life education who wanted to know to see some examples. They wanted to know how it worked, but they were overwhelmed by that mailing list because it's literally hundreds of messages a day. And it was overwhelming. So one of the initial ideas was to start a blog that would be a resource for people who were fairly new to Second Life education. And so she asked me if I would basically organize it, not be the sole contributor, but to organize it. And so we started that, well, it was just before Christmas. So it's been about 7 months now, almost 8 months. And we have about a dozen contributors, and we publish stories from everywhere from new campus openings to machinima pieces that are, you know, put out by education projects. And we're pretty open to more contributors, because we try to get people who are doing lots of things. We also get contributors who are fairly busy. So we welcome new contributors. But I love what ResEd does, and that it creates this community, and there's lots of discussion and affinity groups sort of based inside ResEd. And sort of the way the SLED blog works is to provide kind of a showcase and a feature for those kinds of projects. And so we try to write profiles of events that are going on, and we send correspondents to conferences and ask them to write up sessions and provide notes for people who couldn't attend and things like that.
So in the wider discussion here, how has virtual kind of platforms impacted on learning, do you think?
Well, I think on one level, it's provided a community for educators that wasn't there before. You know, just in the first few months that I was in Second Life, I was already collaborating with astrophysicists and with, you know, elementary school teachers and with, you know, Ivy League professors, people I never would have had any contact with otherwise. And we're sharing ideas and we're co-teaching classes and, you know, writing research papers together. And that kind of stuff just did not happen before Second Life was around. So there's certainly that. So it changes the way educators do their job. But I think it also has pushed pedagogy forward quite a bit, because you'll hear a lot of people preaching about don't be the stage on the sage, the sage on the stage, be the guide on the side. And this whole idea of a lecture model, and especially in higher education, is really dead. It's really ineffective with Gen Y and millennial students, because they're used to being participants. And I think Second Life has given us a space that sort of forced us to learn to teach that way, because you just can't lecture in Second Life effectively. You really have to do hands-on learning. So all of a sudden you've got thousands of educators from all kinds of different universities and K-12 campuses, and even corporate trainers, getting together saying, I need to learn how to engage my students as an audience in a different way, and to put more power in their hands. And in the Second Life environment just forces you to sort of adapt to that kind of pedagogy.
So give us some case studies then, which kind of illustrate the potential of these virtual worlds, if you would.
So one example that I like is Beth Ritter Guth. She teaches at a community college up in the New England area, and I forgive me for not knowing the name of the school, but she was teaching literature, right? And so, and I've done this too. You teach Dante's Inferno year after year, and the students read it, and they struggle with the language, and they don't get it, and they're like, okay, some boring old white guy wrote this book, whatever, let us out, it's a poem, you know, why is it so long, and everything. So what she did was, she had her students reading it, but then they were also building the Inferno in Second Life. So here are all these students who, you know, when you read, you get mental images in your head of what you think a setting looks like, of what you think a character looks like, and you often don't get to compare that with somebody else's experience reading the same piece. But here are these students building the scenery and the characters and the set of this poem, and together, and all of a sudden they're talking about deeper issues about, well, what do you think he meant by that, and what's this symbol for, and, you know, where is this in the allegory? And then other students get to come along later and experience the spaces that's been created by these students. Mm-hmm. So that kind of hands-on, constructive learning experience is what Second Life is so good at. But then you also see great examples of, role-playing exercises and simulation exercises that just simply aren't possible in the real world. We either can't afford to create them, or they're too risky or dangerous on a campus. I mean, I can't do a firefighting simulation with students on campus without investing a considerable amount of money. But in Second Life, that's really easy to do, and you can involve more people. Mm. So, you know, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but Ken Hudson up in Toronto, one of the projects that he was working on with his university at Loyal was a border crossing simulation. So they've got students in classes who are learning to be border crossing officers, safety officers, right? And putting them in the booths with the real officers at the border is kind of dangerous and risky, and they're really not allowed to do it. But they had trouble acclimating these students to what that situation was really going to be like. So they built a border crossing in Second Life. And some of the students play, you know, the border crossing officers, and the other ones drive cars through it and try to hide things, you know. So they learn from both sides what that situation is like. And it's just fascinating.
So what are the challenges that exist using these virtual worlds, not just Second Life, but the kind of broader virtual worlds and settings? What are challenges that do you see that you come across?
Well, certainly hardware is a huge issue, you know, just access. And I'm hoping that in the next couple of years that will come down. You know, we're seeing more virtual spaces that are browser-based, that don't involve big software downloads and don't involve fancy video cards. Things like, you know, Hello Kitty Online and more other social virtual worlds. So hopefully that will be overcome. There's certainly a steep learning curve. It's not, you know, as easy as learning an instant messaging program. But it has so much more capability. It has so much more possibility. It's really like learning Second Life, for example, is like learning a suite of tools. You know, you don't have to learn them all at once. And I think that's part of the obstacles that we run into as educators is we want to teach our subject material. We don't want to teach Second Life, or we don't, you know, want to teach software. We want to teach English or math or whatever. So hopefully these spaces will become simpler to learn and easier to use.
And tell us about the trends that you've seen then over the last, 6 years, which you've been a lot involved with virtual worlds. What has been the major kind of shifts that either excited you or maybe worried you?
Well, certainly the demographic has changed. Okay. When I started exploring virtual worlds, it was the stereotype anyway, was that it was the 18, 19-year-old antisocial guy living in his parents' basement, you know, who didn't have a date, who hung out in virtual worlds. And like, we know Second Life, the average user is well over 30 years old. I mean, this is not World of Warcraft demographic. It's much different. And then, of course, we've got this new, millennial generation coming up, and even beyond them, where girls are experiencing virtual worlds before boys. And we've got these, this new move towards social virtual worlds that don't have game mechanics in them. It's not, you're not having to fight an orc as soon as you log in. You can just make a friend or walk around or change your clothes, you know? So that the kind of shift from a virtual world as necessarily an escape to a communication tool really makes me excited, because I think there's tons of possibilities there, and it's really going to break some of the negative stereotypes about, if you hang out in a virtual world, you must not have a real life. You know, I can't have a second life because I have too much of a first life. Yeah, whatever. You know, it's, you watch a lot of TV, I bet, though, you know. So, so that kind of that I see that's exciting. The only thing I think that I'm worried about is that we're still seeing the kind of uncritical adoption of this kind of technology, and I don't think educators are particularly guilty of this, but corporations certainly are, where it's bright and shiny and new, and it's getting some press coverage, so they think it's the right thing to do, and so they jump on, and they don't do their research. They don't do the proper groundwork in order to do it well, and so they end up creating something that really flops, and then all this negative press is created about, for example, well, you can't make money in Second Life. Well, nobody said you could, really. You thought you could. You didn't do your research, and so you came in and, built this huge presence, and you didn't, make any return on your investment. Well, that's not Second Life's fault. It's your fault, because you didn't do it right. So I think I'm hoping that we'll see more critical adoption, and educators certainly have a big role to play in that, because I think we set some of the best examples of how to use these spaces for constructive purposes.
I'm going to end the interview here with a future question. What do you see happening with virtual worlds and education going forward from here?
I think that especially in higher education, because students are becoming a bit more migratory, they don't necessarily start and finish their degree at the same university or at the same place. A lot of students are starting as distance learners and then moving to campus or vice versa, that virtual worlds, especially as kind of campus centers, as community spaces for students, are going to be very powerful. They're going to provide that sense of co-presence that like distance learners don't always get in a chat room or some kind of threaded discussion board. But outside of that, I think, what we're, as educators, we're facing this generation of students that are coming up that don't think anything of being in a virtual world. It's not a big deal. The Webkin and Club Penguin generation are going to say, virtual world, well, why not? Like, why don't we have one? It's not why do we have one, but why don't we have one? So it's going to be much more commonplace, which means we have to step it up a bit and be ready to do really good teaching in these spaces and not just treat them as novelties.
So,
which,
Robin,
I think we'll do.
Which, yes, I was just going to say, thank you for giving up your time to speak to Res Ed. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And let's go back to Amira and Rick, who's still in Tampa, with the events.
First off, for our events, looking ahead to November 10th and 11th, there's going to be a Virtual Worlds in Education Conference. This is actually happening within Second Life, in-world only, but hosted by ECU, East Carolina University. We've got some ECU in the house here. Woo! The conference is going to be a 48-hour period in order for participants from all over to be able to come in, and registration is free. Full information, especially on the call for proposals, is also at resed.org.
Coming up later in November, from November 20 to the 21st, is the Researching, Learning in Virtual Environments Conference, better known as ReLive 08. That's happening hosted by the Open University in Milton Keynes, United Kingdom. There'll be a keynote by Edward Castronova, who some of you may have heard of, and a panel debate chaired by Sarah De Freitas, Director of Research at the Serious Games Institute. There'll be paper presentations, workshops, the whole shebang. It's an enormous opportunity for you to network with other practitioners and researchers in the field. For information, go to www.open.ac.uk/relive08. I messed that up. Just go to resed.org for the information.
And lastly, i4u Alliance. This is happening now, every Friday, NPR Science Fridays, 11 to 1, Second Life time. Be there. It's great. If you have other events going on, let us know. Send them over to resedinfo@globalkids.org. One, two, three.
Back to you, DK!
Perfect. You guys are wonderful.
Okay, if we do that like 6 more times, we'll get a perfect. All right? So just...
All the links referenced in this podcast, as well as the full transcripts, will be available on the show notes at resed.org.